University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Can you hear them talking about us, telling lies? Is that a surprise? Can you see them, see right through them? They have a shield, nothing must be revealed. It doesn't matter what they say. No one listens.
We're back at the races, coming up on 20 into hour three. And I've got to slip in before the weekend hits us. News from Maryland, where Alan Foreman just sent me the note. The bill that will keep the Preakness at Old Hilltop and will remake both the racetracks at Laurel and Pimlico. The bill is out of the Senate Budget and Tax Committee, unanimous bipartisan support. The Senate will finish it next week. The House is moving, and this is moving at warp speed. So pretty exciting. Jay Privman joins us. Also exciting.
Oh, could there be anything even more exciting?
Well, I don't know if you were
probably
listening earlier.
I'm going to say yes.
You say yes? Okay. I don't know. Yeah. Andy was on just before, and he yielded to you. He said, I got to wrap up because I don't want to take away from Jay.
He's a busy man.
He's going to be busy tomorrow. They got 3.5 hours of TV coverage with Gulfstream, and then the other thing. So it's it's a big Saturday, and you've been there all week.
Got in Tuesday night. Lots going on here with the Fountain of Youth on Saturday, and horses training for upcoming races. So I've been at Palm Meadows the last couple mornings. I'm actually still here now, just finishing up my work for today. So it's been a good visit. Looking forward to the card tomorrow.
Well, and it's been such a funny week, Jay, with no prep last week, and kind of turned out that even the allowance or even maiden type, there really wasn't anything glaring. So it gave everybody a little bit of a pause before we get a lot of intense action. And, of course, next week, the Gotham, the San Felipe, the Tampa Bay Derby, things really start to get into gear on the Derby watch.
Yeah, very much so. Like you said, the one big race this week, three next week. So the last weekend was the only weekend between then and when the last preps are run, which is April 11th, the dates of the Arkansas Derby in Lexington, that there won't be any point scoring races towards the Derby. Every other weekend, every weekend between now and then there is. But so that was your breather on the far turn. Now it's time to ride your horse from the quarter pole home.
Did anything, we didn't talk last week, but any Derby watch movement between you and Marty?
Well, yeah, as we had in the paper today, Steve, we did take Structor out of our top 20. He missed a work. Chad Brown said he was in the process of reevaluating what he was going to do with him. He had been potentially running in the Fountain of Youth, but after he missed the work last week, it was obvious that wasn't going to happen. And then he gave us an update that they're just sort of reevaluating what's going on with him, but he had a minor setback. So we took him off because he's just not going to make it. It doesn't look like. And we added Chancet, to our top 20. But that was it, and that was only because of the defection of Structor. Otherwise, things would have just stayed the same, because as you were noting, there was nothing going on that would have normally caused us to adjust the list, because there weren't any prep races. But that setback with Structor obviously forced our hand, and he had to come off the list. We decided to put Jansen on there.
Well, and of course, now we're going to be on a kind of a wait and watch to some degree. Seems like Safi Joseph's going to go ahead and run him as opposed to bypassing the opportunity tomorrow and maybe going to Tampa. That has been floated. Mike Welsh just talked about it a little bit earlier. Do you have any further development this morning out at Palmettos?
No, not. I mean, chance it's at Gulfstream, so I haven't seen Safi today. And so there were quite a few horses who were not expected to run in the Fountain of Youth who ended up entering on Wednesday. Maybe after they look at the field, they come out. But as of now, there's 12. Maybe in the morning, if a couple of those come out, it would further embolden the chance it connections to run. But as you mentioned, the fallback would be to go to Tampa next week, and they don't need to decide today. They can wait till tomorrow to make up their minds.
True. Well, let's dive in. Let's talk about this Fountain of Youth. And certainly the conversation starts with Dennis's Moment.
Right, making his first start since the Breeders' Cup, which was a complete throwout because of the way he stumbled at the start. He was the odds-on favorite in that race, coming off that win in the Iroquois, which followed the romping maiden win that he had at Ellis Park. I don't know what to make of this horse, Steve. Obviously, he, on his day, is very talented. He's trained well at Gulfstream Park. I've only seen him this week in person on Wednesday morning. I watched him gallop, and he looked good, but there's not much you can go on off that. My biggest concern with this horse is that the form of his two wins has not held up. Most notably, the Iroquois, Scabbard was second in that race, and he's run three times now since then, all going two turns, and all have been underwhelming efforts to the point where he's not really being taken as a serious Derby contender. Maybe he's better around one turn, but length and three-quarter win over Scabbard last September doesn't quite look the same right now as it did then. And that's my biggest concern with Dennis's Moment, is he a little more dressed up than he actually is? The Breeders' Cup's a throwout. You can't condemn him for that. He had no chance the way he stumbled at the start. So it's a tough call for me on this horse as to just exactly where he is. But, from a gambling standpoint, I would have to play against him just because there's enough doubt that, to me, he's worth playing against at that price. That said, I obviously respect him, because if he does run back to those figs and those two wins, he's going to be right there.
Agreed. And even the way it seems that the race is structured and where the pace is coming from, it feels like he's going to have an ideal scenario to reestablish himself.
Certainly. I mean, three of the top contenders that he's running against drew very poorly, with, as we were talking about earlier, with Jansen on the far outside. Atay in the end, who was the runner-up to Tis the Law, is in post 11. Shotsky's at 10. So they all need to overcome that post. I'll tell you the horse who I think's getting overlooked and who I'm probably going to end up gambling on, and that's a scene on TV, who ran Chancet right to the wire last time, getting beat ahead. They were well in front of Sole Volante, who came back to win the Sam Davis. And I think this horse could be ending up in the 5-to-1 range. And I liked, he hasn't run two turns, but he's by looking at lucky out of a pulpit mare, so there's no reason why he shouldn't go two turns. His figs have improved with every race. And I think he's, for me, just the way the race has come up, he's the gamble.
I'm thrilled to hear you say that because I have brought him up with every conversation this morning because the people that have been talking about Chance it and how excited they were coming into the race to side with him, and I just kept saying to myself, if you like Chance it, what's not to like about Kelly Breen's horse? They just feel the same way. So I agree and you get Paco Lopez, who, you don't have to worry about aggression. Well, sometimes
you do. Actually, you do.
Sometimes. He's no Lady Bing winner.
In terms of the other, the needle moving too far to one side. So, yeah.
That's true. Pick out a few others in here, Jay, that Shotsky coming down. Jerry O'Dwyer was waiting for a chance to, jump in. I'm sure he's not thrilled with the way the entry box ended up treating everybody.
Well, I mean, I've said on your show before, and I think if you read my Derby Watch every week, I'm not in part of Camp Shotsky. He's obviously a talented horse. He's won the Remsen. He was second in the Withers last time. But I thought the Remsen was an average race at best. He beat Aja Weed, who did not come back and perform, notably, I thought, in his next start, his first race at three. I thought the Withers was a subpar race for the level with Max Player winning. And maybe Shotsky will be better. He's been on the lead his last couple races on a kind of a deep tiring track at Aqueduct, and he's not going to have the speed to make the lead here, so maybe with a target he'll run better. But I just think he's not fast enough to beat these horses, so he's not for me.
Fair enough. Ette Indienne. Here's Patrick Biancone, who has really... really emerged. It turned out that Diamond Oops was a harbinger of things to come, and here he is with two horses, not one, to be seriously considered going forward toward Derby.
Right. So Ette Indienne, who runs tomorrow, and then Soleil Volante, who we were just talking about a moment ago, who comes out of who ran in the Mucho Macho Man and came back to win the Sam Davis. He goes next week in the Tampa Bay Derby. Ette Indienne drew poorly in post 11. He, like Chance, and I'm sure hoping that there's a couple of defections from some of those UFOs that are drawn closer to the rail and maybe move them in a spot or two. And his last race was very good. It was sort of lost in the fact that he was a distant second to Tis the Law, but he was well in front of everybody else. He got a 95 buyer speed figure. Both of his dirt races have been very good. So there's really nothing to like about it. If you take Tis the Law out of that race, people would be raving about Ette Indienne's runaway win in the Holy Bull and to run second to the horse who's kind of acknowledged as the lukewarm favorite for the Derby at the moment is a notable performance. Unfortunately, Luca Panici got injured recently, but certainly a worthy replacement with Florent Giroux going to take over for him, and also next week for Soleil Volante as well. So, I would not be surprised if this horse won. Certainly off his Holy Bull, he figures to be right there.
Anybody else who you want people to know something about?
Well, I think Country Grammar is an interesting horse to follow. I don't really like him tomorrow. He was intended for an allowance race that didn't fill, and that's why he ended up going in here. I talked to Chad Brown about him yesterday, and he told me that he's really pointing for the wood with this horse, and he wants to get a race into him now. And he wanted that allowance race, and when it didn't go, he thought this was the best next option rather than just sitting in the barn in order to try and move him along towards his pre-Derby target, which is the wood. So I'd keep an eye on this horse to see how he runs tomorrow with not an expectation of him doing well enough to win the race, but turning it an encouraging three-year-old debut and then moving forward off that as he goes towards the woods. So I would just keep an eye on him.
Paul Pompa and Tonalist Colt that should appreciate, you know, the distance. Broke his maiden at a mile and an eighth, and so good suggestion, Country Grammar. Well, Jay, in addition to the Fountain of Youth, which concludes the card, it's a terrific slate. Anything else on the day that you kind of came across your field of vision?
Well, I did the preview of the Gulfstream Park Mile. You know, you were talking about Diamond Dukes, who was initially intended for that race, but he was a little bit dull this week. They took some blood work on him, didn't like the way that came back, and so he wasn't even entered. But I like these one-turn miles. I think they just bring together horses who might not be at their best going two turns, so maybe some late-running sprinters stretching out. A couple of the horses in here that intrigued me were High Cal and Hog Creek Hustle, who are just so much better as late-running sprinters that have settled into that after both trying the Derby trail last spring at three. I think Hawk Creek Hustle grew better. He's got the outside box. I just don't know if going out to a mile is ideal for him. He's terrific at 7/8. And I thought High Cal ran a good race off the bench at Aqueduct last time, and I would expect him to move forward off that. So that was a race that I thought was an interesting race to gamble into, because I don't think there's a standout in there. Mr. Freeze will be favored, but he certainly is capable of winning, but I don't know that he has to win. And I thought the other two that I mentioned, High Cal and Hawk Creek Hustle, were worthy alternatives to the favorite in there.
Fun race, and you know, the focus whenever we have these three-year-old cards, everybody piles on, and so much attention is given to the Derby trail features, and you know, then when you look back over the course of the year, you realize, you know, there were certain races that were important in the general scheme of things, and this feels like one.
Yeah, I mean, you've got horses here who could move on towards races like the Met Mile if they continue to progress, you know. Or Dale Romans told me that Mr. Freeze could go to the Godolphin Mile next month, depending on how he does. So you've got things like that to see down the line. And then obviously there's a number of grass races, you know, from the Canadian Turf, which is in a flat mile, to, the mile and three-eighths race, and races for three-year-olds on the grass, and older fillies and mares. So it's a really, really good card, stakes-filled card.
Well, looking forward to it and your coverage. Meanwhile, whenever you go down there, this is always an important trip for you because it gives you a chance to catch up with the horsemen that are preparing for other spots. And, you know, Marty, you'll head to Tampa next week for the Tampa Bay Derby. But you picked up a storyline there with Spa City. You obviously spent time as well with Barkley Tag. Talk about some of the other Derby Watch top 20s that you you got tidbits on.
So regarding Spa City, not on the top 20, but certainly a horse that is we've got our eye on because we both, Marty and I, liked his maiden win at Gulfstream. He worked today. He went 5/8 in a minute, .85 for McLaughlin, and he's going to go in the Tampa Bay Derby next week. He's a Street Sense colt who won a mile and eighth maiden race at Gulfstream about 3 weeks ago. It was a pretty fast race for the level, and he'll get his chance now to step up in what's shaping up as a pretty decent edition of the Tampa Bay Derby. So there's him. I saw John Service talk about Mischievous Alex, who is not really on the Derby trail, but he is going to run in the Gotham next week. He worked the other day. He ships up there on Wednesday to New York for the Gotham. And he told me Kendrick Carmouche will ride him. Jose Ortiz was going to ride him. As you know, he's out right now with a fractured wrist. And then you mentioned Tis the Law. I talked to Barkley Tag yesterday. I noticed that, you know, the horse had come back and breezed once after his win in the Holy Bull about 9 or 10 days later, but he hadn't since. And that always just, you know, sends my radar up of, okay, what's going on? And I went by the barn just to check and see what was new with the horse and asked when he was going to breeze next, and he told me that he'd be breezing Sunday or Monday, and that the reason he hadn't breezed is because he had pulled a shoe off recently, and fortunately nothing untoward happened when that happened. But there was no rush with the horse. He was never intended for the Fountain of Youth. They had said after the Holy Bull that the next race was going to be in the Florida Derby. So there was no rush to have to hurry up and get him back to the track, just make sure that that foot was not going to be compromised, which it wasn't. Everything's fine. He galloped the last couple of days. He's set for a breeze, and he'll get several breezes in now before the Florida Derby. So, you know, it was as hiccups go, it was the most minor of them. But I, you know, appreciate when trainers are forthright about even something like that, because those horses are obviously ones that everybody's watching heading towards the Kentucky Derby, and the last thing you want to do is have something like that get out, you know, a month from now, and people are going, well, why didn't we read about that earlier? So I appreciate when a trainer, as Barclay Tagg was yesterday, is honest and forthright about something like that, because it's minor, but people want to know.
No, absolutely. And of course, you know, Barclay's had, close to two decades to to get ready for his next Derby Trail experience. Funny side, being the first.
Yeah, no, it'd be a heck of a story to come back and be in that position again 17 years after Funny Side did it.
Amazing.
You know, he doesn't get the kinds of chances that some of these other guys do. He doesn't have a mega stable with, you know, 52-year-olds to start with every year and see which ones make it to the Derby the following year. And I think for him to be back in this position, especially with the same connections, is just a great story. And it's a tribute to what kind of a horseman Barclay is. I have a lot of respect for him. I've always thought he's just a top-class horseman. And he and his longtime assistant, Robin Smullen, do a tremendous job with their horses. And I'm really looking forward to seeing this horse run in the Florida Derby in a few weeks.
And you know, there seems like there's a little sidebar when you mention Robin, because I'm seeing, I don't know if it's a daughter or a niece that is exercise riding a Smullen.
Heather.
Heather, yes.
Right. So yeah, she's involved in the operation too. So you know, it's a first class operation from a horsemanship standpoint, and I just, you know, really, like I said, I have a ton of respect for that.
Nice.
That barn.
He's in his own way, he's a treasure. And I can recall when I first started coming to Saratoga regularly, one of the things that I learned, whether somebody told me or I read it or I don't even remember how, but Barclay Tagg off the van coming up, you know, before he had moved to New York when he was still in the Mid-Atlantic, and you know, watch out for Tagg and the Rockingham Shippers, and that was my first exposure, you know, to Barclay Tagg, and to be watching for his horses in the PPs. Jay, I also want to slip in the news from yesterday. Right before I got off the air, you had posted the Wolf Award story, and I just gave it a quick mention, and we should differentiate. You can't tell your Quiñones without a program.
Right, yeah, Luis Quiñones, Luis M. Quiñones, who currently at Mahoning Valley, veteran rider. He's won more than 1,900 races. He was the second winningest rider in the country last year behind Gerard Ortiz. And yeah, one of the things I like about this award, Steve, is that it's voted on by your peers. You can only win it once.
Yep.
And when you look at the lineup of who were the finalists this year, there were five riders. I think from a public standpoint, from a fan standpoint, Quiñones is unquestionably the least high-profile person that was on that list. But I think it shows you what his peers think of him, that in terms of what he's accomplished as a rider and his integrity and the way he conducts himself on and off the track, that he won out. So, and that's one of the things I really like about this award, is because it's not just an award that goes to whoever is already in the Hall of Fame or has won an Eclipse Award or has won the most great one races. There's more to it, and I think it shows what other riders think of a person when a guy like that is the one who prevails, especially against the lineup he was up against this year. So, you know, I just can't congratulate a guy like that enough. And I love seeing guys like that win, you know, going back to when, you know, somebody like Dean Coutts won, or the riders like that. It's just nice to see guys like that get a tribute like this.
Agreed. And everybody that I've ever had on the show subsequent to their winning the Wolf, they're overwhelmed by it. Scott Stevens winning that, you know, there was one that was special. And I had Mike Luzzi, you know, Luzzi, whose career looked to be over and came back from a fractured pelvis. I mean, it just, you know, it's one way for the riding community to, you know, to acknowledge each other. It's very cool. It's a very cool.
Yeah, and like I said, it's for not just how they do
right
as a rider. It's for who they are as a person. Now that it's been, and that's what it's always been. But it was voted on a lot of times in the years going back 20 years ago or so by the public, and it's now voted on just by the jockeys, and I think it's a real window into what they think of people who ply their trade maybe a little bit out of the spotlight, but do good work on and off the track, and that's it's nice that someone like that gets recognized.
And Jay, before I forget, and because it's the while it's fresh in our mind, and we didn't talk last week, Henry Marino.
Yes, he passed away. Yes, the veteran trainer, the very popular. You know, he and you know Ray York as well passed away.
Yes, past Ray York too.
A tough week for some of the old timers out in California who I was, you know, first around when I came around. I mean, Ray wasn't really riding much when I first came around, but you know, Henry was still a force.
Sure.
When I first came around, especially with South Americans, I mean, he was one of the real wizards with the South American mares that would come up in the 70s and 80s, and so well with them, going back to, you know, horses like Sang and Retos and mares like that. And, you know, until recently, when his health really had gotten quite poor, he was a regular out in the mornings, part of that coffee clatch that would include, you know, Mel Studi and Barry Abrams and, yep, and that whole group. And it was always just great to see him there. And, you know, I was glad to see some of the tributes that were put up to him, because, you know, he fought in the Korean War and just did a lot of really good things in his life, and I was, you know, it was nice to see some of the tributes that he got outside of just racing alone. And then in terms of Ray York, you know, winning the Kentucky Derby, he was just a 20-year-old kid when he won on Determined, and you know, he was a guy who, after he had retired, he was a regular visitor to Del Mar in the summers, and just always very effervescent. He just light up a room, just, you know, great personality, and then he passed away just the other day as well. So I appreciate you bringing those guys up, Steve.
No, I especially, you know, because Moreno, I only you know knew through the program, and Ray York through, you know, through sepia tone images, and
right.
You know, there's some funny, I mean, it's funny, there's a number of anecdotes that have come to the fore. I saw somebody make a comment about Ray York. I guess a story that's associated with him is somebody came to see him in the jocks room and asked the guard, is Ray York there in the jocks room? And he said, I can't hear him, so no.
that's great. I believe that.
they say he was just a firecracker and outgoing, yep, and a chatterbox and really cool. And Moreno had Johnny D yesterday, you know, talked about how what a wry humor he had and that he was a little imposing until you got to know him. But once you did, that he was as funny and warm and likable, and I only know his nephew, you know, Bob at Los Al for
right
many years, and I'm sorry I didn't get to know Henry Moreno better.
Well, he, like I said, I'm glad you brought that up.
Jay, I appreciate it, and we're looking forward to tomorrow. We'll be watching your missives, DRF Live, and on the Twitterverse, and we'll talk next week ahead of a huge three-tiered weekend: Gotham, San Felipe, Tampa Bay Derby.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you then.
You got it. DRF Pridman, everybody. And for those of you on Twitter, I nailed it. I put up, I wait till you see this picture of Dave Keon next to Jay. it looks just like Dave Keon. It's pretty funny. Jeff Siegel is standing by, and he'll pick up the ball and take us to the goal line. Jeff, good morning.
How are you today?
Excellent. And before we do anything else, any input on the Santanie the Third today for those of us that are going to play the Stronach 5?
That's a tough sequence today, I got to tell you. That is a really hard deal. I looked at that race, and I didn't really have a great feel for it, honestly. I was trying to find a single somewhere in the sequence, and even that was hard, so I wish I could help you. I think you're on your own on this one.
All right, all right.
The major flaming race. I looked at the field and Raneem dropping Malibu Cat. I mean, they look logical, but I don't know if I trust them. So, and the firsters don't do anything for me. So, anything can happen in that race.
I ended up, you know, in terms of a single, I sort of surprised myself, actually. I didn't expect going into it, and I did some handicapping yesterday with Brian Nadeau and Brian at ExpressBet. All of Brian's thoughts that he expressed with us yesterday, and you heard replayed this morning there at ExpressBet, as well as the ticket with Ron Nicoletti and the team at Gulfstream, and Matt Dinnerman has got a horse. In fact, I realized later when I went and looked at the Resource Center at ExpressBet, Dinnerman likes a horse that I liked as well. And I'm going to try to single and get through the Golden Gate Third with That's a Bad Boy, who's turning back and it feels like a horse that is going to benefit. You know, Mr. McLean is going to get a lot of the attention, deservedly so, 9-5 favorite. But I think there's enough pace, and it's pretty rare that a horse wires at Golden Gate. So I got a feeling That's a Bad Boy is the right one, and I'm going to try to tiptoe through there.
Well, I like him. You know, if I had to pick one, that would be the one. First time for a tag is always a good angle.
Yep.
Outside draw should be able to settle in. He's coming out of infinitely tougher races.
Yep.
Now, he's never gotten a shred of money in any of his races. He's always a big price. But and this jock rode a 16-1 winner for Frankie Miranda not too long ago, Brian Pena. So that kind of makes sense. And I think that if you look at his form, he should have enough, even though he's coming out of route races. And I like that route, the sprint angle at Golden Gate. You got to be a pretty fit horse there to win in the all-weather. But I think he's got enough speed to lay just in the outside in a stalking
yep.
position and then go on with it. Again, on numbers, he's a fit. So, 4-1, yeah, I guess. Yeah, if you have to, you got to find a single somewhere, and I think you're right. That's a bad boy in the third at Golden Gate, which is leg C. I would think that if I had to lean on one, that would be the one.
Let's turn our attention to Saturday, Jeff, and the opportunities obviously abound at Gulfstream. Haven't talked about the Pasadena at Santa Anita. I'll pretty much turn it over to you. What's your focus on Saturday?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so many good races on Saturday. You've got the Saudi Cup, you've got the Fountain of Youth, and out here in California, we have a race for three-year-olds going a mile on the grass, and there's a horse named Rager in that race that I like. Mischief Colt, trained by Andrew Lerner. Now, if you look at his form, both of his grass races were actually very good. He doesn't train much like a good colt on the dirt. That's why he was almost 20-1 in his debut at Santa Anita during the fall when he won first time out, and that was a sprint. And they put him on the dirt in the Bob Hope at Del Mar, and he was non-competitive, and then they tried him long on the all-weather at Golden Gate, and that didn't work. Back on the grass and the Baffle sprinting again, he ran very well to be second behind Billy Batts, who was in a big race in Saudi Arabia tomorrow. And I thought he ran really well against Slow Fractions, and now he stretches out to a mile. I don't think that's going to be an issue, so yeah, I like Rager. I don't know what kind of price he's going to be. I don't have the morning line yet, but I think from where he's drawn in with pace in the race, I think Rager can maybe tag the speed in the Pasadena, which is our seventh. Pales in comparison, though, to the Gulfstream Park card. That is an incredible card with 10 stakes and, of course, the Fountain of Youth to finish it off as race 14.
Before we talk about any Gulfstream opinions, there is one race I guess we should go back to and discuss a little bit, the Buena Vista. And how about Keeper of the Stars, who you and I sniffed out over the summer last year when she ran that race in the Autumn Miss, and then she kind of got lost in the woods on the way to Grandma's house, and then she turns into the big bad wolf in the Buena Vista.
Yeah, I mean, I've liked her, you know, in several races, as you have, quality filly trained by Jonathan Wong. But I didn't really give her that much chance, quite frankly, in that race. Not that I didn't think she couldn't win or anything like that, you know. But I thought that maybe in that race, in handicapping it, that the favorite, Jolie Olympica, who had been undefeated up until that time, would win, especially with the kind of trip I projected her to have. Inside speed, and she got that kind of trip, and she had every chance. And Keeper of the Stars just came and got her at 36-1. So, daughter of Midnight Loot, and so congratulations to her. And that's a good group. It's a really deep and competitive group. They kind of take turns, and it was Keeper of the Stars' turn this time. I think she's probably best at a mile. I know they tried her over a mile and 3/8 at Del Mar, I think it was, and she didn't stay the trip. But give it a mile. She's pretty tough, and she was. I hope you had her at 36-1.
No, did not.
Okay, did not.
I wasn't scared about trying some prices, but I just didn't see it. Form it seemed to have eluded her. How about a Fountain of Youth opinion or anything else on that card tomorrow?
Great card tomorrow with a bunch of good stakes races, couple of salty maiden races. I mean, I like about 6 or 7 horses in that on the program. Now, rather than go through every one of them, you can get my selections at xbtv.com, and we've got the full card Santa Anita. Zoe and I did a workout report for the Gulfstream Park, which we'll be able to see later on today. But in terms of the Fountain of Youth, I'm really curious to see what kind of performance we get from Dennis's moment. I loved him as a two-year-old. I think he was legit as a two-year-old. I know the form hasn't held. He's been working at Gulfstream Park, and he's been working okay, but not one of these knock-your-socks-off type of work tab. He looks fine, and we'll see how much growing up he's done since last seen when he had lost all chance in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. If he had had a better post, I would have thought, and I mean, he still may be able to upset him, but Chance, it's a very good colt. I mean, he's perfect one-for-one, two-turning in his career. He's been a sprinter or a miler most of his life. But he did win a race called the In Reality at Gulfstream Park for Florida Breds by 7 last year. And I thought his Mucho Macho Man win was very, very good. 99 buyer number, a career top, and he's trained unbelievably well. But he's got to get over that 12 hole from the going a mile and 1/16. That's tough to do, and if he can do that, then maybe he really is for real. So it's a good field. I don't know if we've got the Kentucky Derby winner in it, but, hey, you never know. And we'll see how Dennis's moment performs as the favorite with Pratt taking over, and we'll evaluate the race afterwards. But you mentioned so many good races tomorrow, there is a maiden that I like, quite frankly, in the second race at Gulfstream Park, a first-time starter named Al Fight Dempsey. And he's training really, really well for Todd Pletcher. You can see his last work on xbtv.com. He worked alone. He looked just terrific. And I know the rail is no bargain when you're talking about a maiden first time out going 3/4. But if he breaks running, this is a good colt, I think. Al Fight Dempsey in the second. A few others in there. A few other races are pretty good as well. So looking forward to that tomorrow, and also, of course, looking forward to that great, great race in the Saudi Cup with, we'll see how, it's like a Breeders' Cup Classic halfway around the world, but I'm really, really interested to see McKenzie and Maximum Security go at each other, and it's going to be a terrific race.
Who's got a tactical edge from your standpoint there? Because it feels like there's some pace that Maximum Security is going to have to deal with if Service wants to, have him involved from the bell.
Well, I think he probably will let him do that. I mean, you look at Maximum Security, we all remember him finishing first in the Kentucky Derby, going a mile and a quarter, but this is a colt with brilliant speed. I mean, his one-turn races, he won his maiden by almost 10, he won an allowance by 6, won another starter allowance by 18, then he won the Bold Ruler in the Cigar Mile. He's got that brilliant sprint speed if you want to use it, and I think he's probably going to use it. Why not? It's a one-turn mile and an eighth, so it's like a long, long sprint. And I think given his kind of speed and the fact that he's fresh, I would expect him to let him show it and let McKenzie have to come get him. Now, McKenzie's a terrific horse as well. We always think of him as being a mile and an eighth tops type of horse, but around one turn, that's right in his wheelhouse. And I think the top of the stretch to the wire, I think those two horses are going to hook up, and then we're going to see a finish for the ages. Maximum Security's got a tactical edge, but, I mean, McKenzie is just, this is what he was born to do, so... Great race to watch.
Now, and given what Brad Free reported during the week about the powdery substance, and interesting that the Northern Cal, the longtime Northern Cal track super, is out at Riyadh and has been working there a number of years, and he explained the difference between the surface there and typical North American surfaces and California surfaces, but still, you would think the heavy going at Santa Anita, which McKenzie has trained over, you would think that it give the situation there with the slower heavy surface that it, he's gotten over that before. I think McKenzie figures very tough in there, Jeff. Jeff, as always, I appreciate it.
No problem. Talk to you next week.
You got it. Jay Siegel Racing, everybody, on Twitter. Jay Privman, Andy Serling, Mike Welch, Ed DeRosa, Nick Tamaro, James Scully, and Hammer. Scratches are up for Laurel and for Gulfstream, and the scratches in the Gulfstream 10th are pretty important. That Noble Lion is coming out of Kelly Rubley's, a horse that really figured in the pick five. So we still got to see Santa Anita and Golden Gate. We'll see what decisions we make. But I've already got it up at the website, and I'll make some changes later after the other scratches come in. Good luck this weekend, everybody. Lots of coverage here on Sirius XM this afternoon and tomorrow, of course, and the Fox Sports 1 and 2 tomorrow. Talk to you Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
ExpressBet's popular and profitable $50,000 Beat the Host competition is back in 2020, and this is your chance to win big. Merely place a live $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. If your earnings top the host total, you win. Register once and compete Saturdays in January and February for a healthy $2,000 in weekly prizes with no takeout, break, or skim. Beat the Host just once to qualify for the $10,000 championship round. New this year, Beat the Host features a challenging and fun cumulative season-long earnings competition with over $20,000 in prizes paid to the top 10 finishers. Whip hosts in all 8 weeks to earn a share of a sweet $3,000 Sweep the Host bonus. Don't delay. Register today for Beat the Host free at ExpressBet.com.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.